Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We welcome three great artists on this week's show. Up first is Kevin KT Thornton of the legendary R&B pop group Color Me Bad. Kevin talks about the group's rise to fame and the challenges that came along with it, not to mention where the band is at today. Up next is talented Canadian artist Rhea May, talking about her career and her catchy new single, Clothes Off. We also speak with talented DJ Frank Walker, who is making noise on the EDM scene and has recently released his hard-hitting song, I Want Everything. We wrap things up with super producer Stonebridge and his brand new song, You Can Have It All.
Capture your need for sound.
This next group really needs no introduction because you say their name and you instantly hear their hit songs playing in your head. I Want to Sex You Up, I Adore Mia Moore, All For You, and the list really does go on and on. They've sold over 12 million albums in the U.S. alone and have won a ton of awards, including an American Music Award and Soul Train Music Awards. We are very excited to welcome original founding member Kevin KT Thornton of Color Me Bad to the Kelly Alexander Show. Kevin, thank you so much for hanging out.
Hey, no problem. Pleasure to meet you, Kelly.
So, Kevin, I wanted to start a little bit with a history lesson, if you will, because, you know, so many people have known you guys forever, but if they don't know exactly how you guys came together, how did that all sort of transpire? And did you know fairly quickly that you guys had something special?
Well, yeah. In the beginning, when we finally hooked up, it was a series of events that occurred. I met Brian Abrams in junior high school. And that's where we started. We were both in choir together, and then the other two guys, Mark and Sam, they had known each other since grade school. So we all ended up at the same high school together, not looking actually forward to trying to create a group or anything, but it just so happens that we all ended up in the same choir together. And we wanted to do something kind of special. So there was a talent show that came about, and we decided to get together. And the thing of it was that we did a song that we learned off of a commercial. It was a Levi's jeans commercial, and the guys on there were just singing this doo-wop a cappella. And at the time, you know, it was just a lot of synthesizer music going around. It was late 80s, you know, Michael Jackson, Prince, they were hitting it and killing it during that particular time. So no one really heard that style of music. So we learned how to sing a cappella off of that commercial. And when we hit the stage and we hit that harmony, man, the girls went crazy. And so it was just like, and always, I think for musicians, always starts out with the girl's attention, either trying to get the attention of a girl or finally getting the attention after performing. And that's what it was, because I remember being on stage and thinking to myself, all right, I think I found my calling. Yes, this is it right here. And so that's what we did. We continued on. We sang in several talent shows in other schools as well, and then made a goal for ourselves to make our presence known also in the Oklahoma City, Oklahoma area where we were from. And then once we accomplished that goal, we said, we want to be nationwide. We want people to know us. And so as groups would come into town, we would make a point to meet them, and we would just sing for them a cappella right then and there. And it just so happens that we finally got the attention of the right people.
That is amazing. It's so great to actually finally know that story. And I wanted to know, you know, from the outside looking in on you guys in those early 90s, it seemed like, you know, you were having the time of your lives. And like you kind of mentioned, making women swoon all over the place. Were you aware of your impact and influence? And were you actually really able at that time to take it all in? Because it seemed like you guys were on a roller coaster.
Well, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, for us, we were... We had known each other since junior high and grade school, so we didn't look at each other as superstars or anything special, you know. And so when I Want to Sex You Up actually came out, I don't know if you remember, it was on a soundtrack for a movie called New Jack City. So the thing of it was that we were on that soundtrack, but the record company wasn't ready to release this as of yet, release the single, or if I don't know if they've even had decided they were going to or not. But people started listening, watching the movie, and then they started calling into the radio stations requesting the song, and that's what built up the hype. Well, what happened was nobody knew who we were, what we looked like. As a matter of fact, as our song was playing all over the world, we had no idea it hit even all over the world. It was just crazy. But as it's hitting all over the world, we were we had a house together we had bought in New York while we were trying to just make it. We didn't even have enough money to keep the electricity on. They cut off our heat. So our song is playing all over the world.
Oh, man.
Hitting, and we're freezing. But right after that, the record company jumped on board and put us on. There was a tour. MTV had a show called Club MTV at the time. It was a dance show. And they did a show with a lot of different artists that would come on. We were part of that. Us, BBD, Gerardo, Tony, Tyra Kemp, and a few other artists. And so we went out, and as we were going out, what the crazy thing of it is, mentally, we're still the same people. Mentally, we're still those guys that were freezing not too long ago, and all of a sudden, people start running up to us, asking for our autographs, and girls start crying and screaming and passing out. And initially, I used to think that they were trying to make fun of us, because I had never seen anything like that. Except for like Michael Jackson and you know, people acting like that. And then I realized that they were just excited to see us. And so I was like, wow, this is amazing. We've made it. We've made an impact. So that's great.
I remember watching you and Boyz II Men both present an award at the Grammy Awards back in the early 90s. I'm not sure if it was 91 or 92, but it seemed like you had this friendly rivalry going on. Were all of you guys friends, and were you supportive of one another in an industry that at the time seemed to have so many similar sounding groups that were coming out, like cookie cutter groups in a way? Was it hard for you guys to sort of stay above the pack? Because you guys managed to do that. Obviously, everyone knows who you are.
Right. Well, you know, I think, you know, the media liked to portray that there was more of a rivalry than what there were internally. It wasn't that we were we disliked them or they disliked us. We actually have a very strong mutual respect for one another. I think that they are one of the greatest vocal groups, you know, ever. But the thing of it is, we did our thing. They did their thing. Even though one of our signature trademarks was a cappella, they had their style, we had our style as well. So yeah, we both have of course there is somewhat of a friendly competition, much more like you would have back in the Motown days with the various groups like the Temptations and the Four Tops, et cetera, where, you know, everyone's confident in their own abilities, but they respect each other's gifts and talents.
Kevin, was it hard to stay grounded in those days because of everyone wanting a piece of you? Like you said, initially you guys were just the same guys, but was it hard to sort of keep it real, if you will? And at the time, what was the biggest, excitement that you yourself experienced? Like whether it was meeting, I don't know if you ever got to meet Michael Jackson, but was there some big celebrity meeting that made it like, wow, we actually made it?
Well, you know, it was... Sometimes it can get very hard to stay grounded when you have everyone doing for you. You know, it's almost as though you can't do any wrong because there's not people around you telling you, you know, this isn't right, this is wrong, or whatever. When you're hitting, it's kind of like you're king or what have you. And I do remember having to personally, you know, sit in my hotel room and kind of do a reality check. Hold on. Let me take my own bags down. If I need something, let me go ahead and get it myself instead of just relying on people constantly and expecting people to do for me. But in this industry, there's an artist that I never forgot his quote. He's one of the greatest male vocalists ever, in my opinion. His name is Luther Vandross. And Luther had made a comment and said, the music industry is 10% talent, 90% business. And that always stuck with me. At the time, we didn't really know the business, like a lot of groups didn't really know the business that well, only what we were, you know, kind of being told. And so what we found, it's a very cutthroat business. You know, what most people see as fans on television, the glitz, the glamour, the excitement, that's only the 10% part of it. There's a very, very big cutthroat business on the other side of that, that if you learn the business, then you can really handle yourself. And you know, unfortunately, we did go through some very trying times with some very unscrupulous people. And, you know, but you live and you learn, you bounce back. This go around, we're very, very, very business savvy. As a matter of fact, Mark and I handle primarily all of the business on our end. And I think we do a very good job at it.
We're very excited to have on the show the original founding, or one of the original founding members of the group Color Me Bad, Kevin KT Thornton. Again, check them out on their website, colormebadmusic.com. You can grab their social media like Twitter and Facebook from there. Kevin, I wanted to ask you as well, you know, as the 90s went on and music tastes changed a bit, was it difficult to produce music that not only was satisfying your taste, but also that of your fans who were also evolving?
Initially, we just kind of just did what felt good, and really what we've always done is really just try to do what feels good to us, and try to keep it fun. There are certain things that we found that worked. One of the things we co-wrote many of the songs that were on our first album. We laced it with harmonies. We poured our hearts into it, and we were just genuine to what we were doing. So basically, if we keep that formula, and that's what we're trying to do coming back, the industry sometimes can become somewhat manufactured. If there's a particular sound or a particular genre of music that's just hitting, then it that can last for several years, and it's just that. For us and a group like us, we may not fit into, like, per se, the club sound, like a whole album. I don't think people want to hear just a whole album full of just CMB singing club music. So basically what we're doing coming back is we are focusing on those things that work: harmonies, real vocals, strong lyrics, lyrical content, and melody. And that's what we have now.
Was it a challenging situation to have the group switch members? I know you left for a time, and then obviously Sam and Brian are no longer with you guys. Was that challenging for things to be shaken up, if you will?
Well, yeah, it is. It is. It's always, change is always difficult, or oftentimes difficult. I shouldn't say always. Oftentimes it is difficult. It's difficult for the people that are going through the change, and then it's difficult for the people watching the change, in particular the fans, et cetera. So, but you know, like for instance, Sam, I end up leaving the group initially, to pursue ministry and focus on my family, for several years. And that's what I had done. I encouraged the guys to continue on. And then Sam, shortly after I had left, decided that he's really has a passion to be behind the scenes. Sam loves writing and producing, and we've seen him on the X Factor as a consultant, and also he's right now, I think he's the vice president of A&R at a record label right now. So he loves developing artists, writing for them, and we're in total support of him. As a matter of fact, every time we go to L.A., we reach out to him, and typically we share a meal together, a couple meals, you know, and hang out with his family and things. So we're very supportive of that, and the decisions that each member makes. Brian, you know, as you know, there are a lot of dynamics surrounding Brian that I won't really get into, but Brian is basically concentrating on Brian. And what we wanted to do, Mark and I, we decided that we wanted to continue the legacy. We had an opportunity, I guess a lot of things in around 2010, actually. It was Brian and Mark who had contacted me saying that a lot of groups from our genre our era were getting back together and people were asking, where's Color Me Bad? And so we came up with a plan. They presented it to me. I prayed on it, and I decided it was the right thing to do, a good thing to do. And we wanted to really make a long-lasting stamp on the industry, one final thing. And so we pursued that, but there were other obstacles internally that we had to deal with, particularly surrounding one particular member. And we decided that the best way to move forward with continuing the legacy in a positive aspect was to continue on, to part ways. And that's what we've done. Now, we've gotten a new member. I reached out to a friend of mine, Jamie Jones of the group All for One, and asked him if he had any recommendations. He recommended our newest member, which is by the name of Martin Kimber. And Martin used to be in a vocal group in the 90s called As One. And he's a great singer, great writer, great producer. And what sold me was when we sang together, we went to his house and to kind of do some work and to meet him. And when we sang a cappella impromptu, I mean, his harmonies just blended, his voice just blended right in, and it was so tight. It was a good fit, and it's continued being a good fit in every single show that we've done so far.
And I wanted to ask you, with regards to Martin, again, you saying that it's a great fit, and that's obviously amazing. I know a lot of the fans of Color Me Bad have embraced him. Was your first big performance with him the Soul Train Music Awards? Because I feel like that's where I saw you guys really come out with him. Was that the big deal?
That was the major, I guess, presentation. But we had been with him since November of last year.
Okay.
So we had done shows with him prior to that show.
And how does it feel? You know, you mentioned earlier about the this resurgence of the 90s sound, if you will, and if people sort of just pay attention to the internet, they can see that, like, the Naughty by Natures of the world and you know, the En Vogues of the world, and you guys, you're all out doing your thing. What does that make you feel like, knowing that you still have these legions of fans that want to see all of your, you know, you 90s acts? I don't want to just say that, but that's where you came from. Do well. Like, what does that feel like, Kevin?
Well, it's always amazing to be appreciated in what you do. But I'll be honest with you, Kelly. I feel that we were blessed to be part of one of the greatest eras of musical history. I mean, the 90s, I believe, produced some of the best music, you know, even since the you know, the old Motown thing. That's just my personal opinion. I personally have a lot of fond memories of not just our music, but several different artists that we listened to during those times. And I think that the people of our era, they feel the same way when we meet them while we're in concert and we get to talk to them one-on-one, face-to-face. They tell us all the time, thank you for bringing, you know, real music back, and we love this era. You know, this is what I was doing around that particular time, or your particular song was the very first song that I ever heard outside of, like, country music, or this is what I played at my wedding. So, you know, it just brings back fond memories. And this go around, what we have dedicated to do, we said that we're going to make the next album, next Color Me Bad album, with the fans in mind. And that's exactly what we want to do, bring them an album that they will be completely proud of and build upon that.
Can you speak a little bit about this project, Kevin, like when we might hear it and what producers you are either working with or hope to work with?
Well, it's just kind of it's kind of open right now. We've spoken to several different producers, and we're just kind of waiting to hear that right song. Now, we've written some songs together, and I think we have some good ones, but we want to really come out with something very strong. The first single that we're looking for will probably be something very happy but fun, you know, with the signature Color Me Bad vocals, harmonies. You're going to hear, you know, all three of us singing lead on the songs, and so that's what we're shooting for as far as time frame. We're trying to get it as soon as possible, but we again, we want to make sure that we come out right. And part of that, again, what most people don't realize is there is a business side to this. So we have to make sure that on the other side, that 90% is prepared and taken care of right now. So we're looking at probably the top of the year sometime coming out with something strong.
Now, before I let you go, Kevin, I wanted to ask you what message you might have for your fans, because not only is this interview going to play on my show, but I want to play a bit of it on another show I host called 90s Now with my colleague Sharon Hyland. And we have, obviously, that is all 90s music, and we focus on 90s artists. And like you even mentioned, you have a legion of fans that have stayed with you and continue to support you to this day. So do you enjoy, you know, socializing with them at shows and on social media? Does it still mean the world to you that someone wants your autograph?
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you enough. I mean, words really cannot express the gratitude that I have for the fans, because, you know, it just bewilders me that some artists, you know, they make it and then they don't want to have time for their fans, because without the fans, we're absolutely nothing. They are the pulse and the heartbeat of our career and everything that we are, our existence. So basically, you know, we have the product, but the fans are the consumer. So you want to please the consumer as much as you can. And really the way that I look at it is that our fans are like a family. We're building one big Color Me Bad family, and we're so appreciative of them. And when we do our shows, yeah, what we plan on doing for however long we're scheduled, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, however long it's going to be. We want to, for that particular time, invite our fans to step into our world for that amount of time. And let us take you back to when times were good, when times were fun, times were less stressful. And that's what we plan on doing.
Amazing. Kevin, it's been such a treat to speak to you. I can't even tell you. So thank you so much for this. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you for your time and support.
That is original founding member of Color Me Bad, Kevin K.T. Thornton. Again, make sure to follow them on their website, colormebadmusic.com.
What's happening? This is K.T. from Color Me Bad, and you're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the TikTok, you don't stop. Stop to the
take off your coat, I'll make you feel at home. Now let's pour a glass of wine, cause now we're all alone. I've been waiting all night, so just let me hold you close to me. Cause I've been dying for you, girl, to make love to me. Girl, you make me feel real good. We can do it till we both wake up. This is what I'll do. Yeah.
We're happy to welcome Canadian recording artist Rhea May to the Kelly Alexander Show, talking about her career in music and her new single, Close Off, produced by Juno Award-winning hip-hop artist Classified. Rhea, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So I have to start off, you know, we have a lot of people actually listening, not only in Canada, but we have some radio stations that play our show overseas in Australia and Japan. So for people who might not know about you, how did you actually get your start in music? And did you always know that that was the plan to be a recording artist?
Yeah, I always wanted to do music. I ended up going into construction management after high school. I lasted about 2 years and then realized that I should just kind of pursue my dreams. So I started releasing kind of acoustic albums and then worked up the courage to ask Classified to work with me, who's been one of my heroes for a while.
And do you find that being sort of out east, because you're, you know, based out of Halifax, Nova Scotia, do you find that being from out east plays a huge part in your sound and just sort of how you carry yourself as a musician?
I think so. And I didn't do a lot of traveling when I was younger, so the only music scene I knew was the East Coast scene, and there's a lot of Celtic here and a lot of folk and indie rock, and a part of that was maybe difficult to break out. I always liked pop music. I liked Alex Sia and Rihanna and all those people, and so I always kind of felt like I was trying to fit in somewhere that I didn't, but I think lately, as soon as I start doing what I really wanted to do, it kind of worked to my advantage that there's not a lot of people doing kind of poppier, upbeat stuff around here.
And how would you actually categorize yourself? Because I know, like, you know, I've read some interviews about you and stuff online, and everyone wants to sort of call you singer-songwriter. Is that how you would categorize yourself? But mentioning that you have this sort of, like, flair for pop and hip-hop.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd call myself. Like, I guess lately people are calling me pop. Like, I sound poppier than other people around here. So I think that's why I'm getting coined pop. But then also I've been invited to all these hip hop festivals and things this year. I think people see that I'm working with Classified and they just invite me on hip hop bills. I've had some of the funniest shows where I'm the only person there with a guitar. And, I played Canada Day. I did a big arena thing with Classified. And it was all hip hop fans. And yeah, it's been super fun that way.
Can you talk to us about how you got going with Classified and then explain to us the new single Close Off? Because it is amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I just actually released a little promo video on my website talking about that too, because I've been a fan of Classified for a while. He's from Nova Scotia as well, and I used to hang out at the skate park in Halifax as like a 14-year-old, and he was just getting started. I don't know if he was in his early 20s, and he was handing out demos just to pass out, who could get his name out there, and I became a big fan of him then as soon as I got that demo. And I just followed his career, and he started working with other like singer-songwriter type people. And as soon as I won an award for my last album, and I had a little bit of press around here, so I thought maybe there's a chance he might know who I am. So I emailed his manager, and then he got back, and I ended up working on a few of his songs, and then asked him to produce my album.
And Close Off, like, where did the idea come for it, and what do you want people to take away from the song? Well, and did you know it was going to sort of head in this direction? Because it's so, like, fun. Like, it's poppy, but it's got this hip-hop action going on, and it's really catchy.
Yeah, I went to Montreal for about 2 months to write for this project, and Montreal is so inspiring to me. Like, Halifax is just, no one's sexy here, no one's, like, you know, like, no one ever says, look at that sexy person from Halifax. And Montreal has this energy to it. So I went there and I immersed myself and I met a whole bunch of new people. And I don't know, it was like 4 a.m. and I had a couple glasses of wine and I just started writing it and I was laughing the entire time. I was like, this is so not me and it's so catchy. I thought it was like something Gnarls Barkley would sing or something. And I sent it to Classified to see if he wanted to use it for his own stuff. And he just wrote back like, LOL, you should do this. So, yeah, I just took a chance. I love it. Yeah, it's one of my favorite songs that we worked on so far.
Do you plan to continue to work with Classified? And who else out there, you know, either artist-wise or producer-wise, would you like to collaborate with?
I really would love to do a collaboration with David Miles. He's, I bump into him often. Him and Classified, obviously, they had that song Inner Ninja, and they've been doing a lot of cool collaborations. And I look up to him a lot as a songwriter. I'd love to work with him. I've been working a little bit with Dylan Guthrow, who works with Classified as well, and I'd love to release like a duo with him. But right now, I'm still so inspired with the stuff I'm doing with Class. I feel like we're just at the tip of something cool, so hope to work with him a lot more.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Canadian musician Ria May. Make sure to check out her website, riamay.com. You mentioned about Montreal being sexy, which I appreciate because I'm from here. So thank you for that, even though I'm not shouldn't be taking all the credit. Is there another place in Canada, though, that you maybe would want to move to? Or do you feel like you have to move? Because I always feel like people, if they're from the outskirts on some level, either feel like they need to make that move to the big smoke, Toronto. Is that something that you think you're going to have to do?
It's always been in the back of my mind until recently. There's a lot of people here, I guess, in Halifax that in the hip hop scene and the, I guess, pop-ish scenes that get frustrated because we're on the outskirts here for Celtic music and indie rock. And I think there's a really cool scene just starting here with David Miles and Dylan Guthrow, myself. And I think it's the right time to be in Halifax. I'm hoping that artists don't have to leave here soon. But Toronto definitely is still that shiny thing that calls to me sometimes.
I wanted to ask you as well, you mentioned before that you like some of the pop stuff, like the Rihannas of the world. You know, who else along those lines do you admire? And do you find that any of their stuff, for example, has crept into your sound? Like, I love Janet Jackson, for example, and I find that she's influenced me so much just with what I do. So is there someone like that that has influenced you?
I listen to pop radio. That's what I listen to when I'm in my car. So I think everything like Bruno Mars stuff when it comes out, and even like how hilarious Nicki Minaj is and doesn't take herself seriously. Like, I think that's definitely influences Clothes Off, because like it's, you know, just writing to have fun with it and not writing to take yourself seriously. Mm-hmm. But I learn from everything. I listen to top 40 stuff that you play all the time. And like, that's what I learn from. So.
Now, you mentioned that you've done some touring, and I've seen your tour dates, and I know you've done some stuff across Canada and into the States. What have you learned being on the road, and are you able to write on the road, and do you miss home when you're gone?
Yeah, I can't write on the road. I actually, and I love writing so much that sometimes being on the road is more of a chore. I know some people just crave to be out there, and I crave to be by myself and writing or in the studio recording. But I guess I learn patience when I'm on the road, and I've met a lot of great people, and I've had a lot of experiences that I couldn't have in small town Halifax. So I'm grateful for this.
Have you noticed when you are doing touring these tour dates around you know, Canada and even into the States, do you notice a difference in the audiences? Like, I'm assuming there would be a difference, you know, from Nova Scotia to Quebec, but like, do you notice a difference even between where you are in Ontario?
Oh, definitely. I feel like you could put me in a room and not tell me where I am anywhere in Canada, and I'd know within 10 seconds. There's such, like, in Montreal, people get up and dance, and in Toronto, everyone just stares at you like you're a movie. And in Halifax, everyone sings along. The States is actually a lot more enthusiastic. Like, people, I saw a ton of CDs down there, and people just, they love live music down there. It's a whole different world. But yeah, every place is so different. It's actually a cool, like, social experiment sort of thing for me.
What role has social media played not only in marketing, you know, you as a brand, but in connecting with fans and new fans?
Social media is, I don't know how people, I often say this, I don't know how people had careers like myself before, because I've never been signed to a label. I did for a long time. I booked every show by myself. I did all the press by myself, like a one person team. And social media has made it possible so that when I go down to the States, there's people that come up to me that already know my music. And that would never happen before for someone like me. Maybe I would have, you know, if this was 10 years ago, I'd have to just give up and go back to construction. So, yeah, I'm so grateful for Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff.
And do you find that a lot of your fans reach out to you? Like, do you get messages like, oh, my God, you know, I love this song, or it's made my day, or what have you?
Yeah, I do. It's not overwhelming amounts, but it's, yeah, definitely, especially when I'm on tour, that's like such a cool part of it, is someone that you've never met before just posts something and says, I love this, you know, this got me through a breakup, or this, you know, I relate to the song so much. That's such a great part of it. You're connecting with people.
I wanted to ask you as well, again, being from the East Coast, like, I've managed to interview a fair amount of artists that seem to always be from Toronto. So it's sort of interesting to me, like, I've been able to speak with David Miles before, and I think he's awesome. And like I said, I've spoken to Class 2, and he's great. Do you find being from the East Coast, like we talked about Toronto sort of being that shiny place to go to. Do you ever have a calling where you would want to go to like a New York or Los Angeles? Because like when I interview Toronto artists, this is a bit of a blanket statement, but I find a lot of them feel that pull, like, oh, their next chore or their next destination is LA or New York.
Right. No, my goal is to be able to stay in Halifax. I think a lot of people in Halifax feel that way, but I want a balanced life too. Like that helps me write songs, and that's what I want to do. I want to get better and better at writing. So I want to live a good life, and I hope to be able to do it out of Halifax. That's my big goal.
How do you feel the Canadian music scene is? Like you've said, you've met a lot of people on the road and stuff. Do you enjoy meeting like artists, let's say, from, you know, out west? And do you think that the scene is healthier than it's ever been?
I love meeting other musicians and you know, going out for a drink or something after a show and getting to hear what their scene is like. I think people are jealous of our scene on the East Coast. It's smaller and, you know, it's not a famous scene yet, but it's so helpful out here. There's no competition, and I don't, and that's not an exaggeration. Like, people don't compete out here. Everyone's so happy for each other all the time. And it's just, I feel like people should be jealous of our East Coast scene. I really do. But I do enjoy meeting other musicians and hearing about their scenes too. And there's definitely a lot going on in Canada right now that we can be proud of.
What is up next for you for the next like 6 months to a year? Like what's your plans? Is an album coming?
Yeah, we're going to be releasing a few more singles this fall, and the album's coming in the winter.
Awesome. Before I let you go, I have to tell you that I feel like you should get ready for a ride, because I feel like this song, Close Off, is going to take you somewhere. So I wish you all the best with that, because I feel like you're on it. So best of luck.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's Canadian musician Rhea May. Again, make sure to check out her website, rheamay.com.
You're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show, and this is Rhea May.
I told you I'm not waiting on the wall. You look way too good to leave this all to luck. And I don't want your heart, your soul, or your hand. I want your body instead. Now, 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 take it slow. On your case, plotting all the ways I can make you mine. Now, now, hardly goes a day, hardly goes away, it must be right. Now, now, open up your door, what are you doing? We're wasting time. I can see you looking at me, looking at me. Is it all in my mind, mind, mind? I told you I'm not waiting on the wall. You look way too good to leave this all to luck. Your heart, your soul, or your hand. I want your body, want your body instead. Now, 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 take your clothes off. Take your clothes off. Got me in a hold, everything is moving slow, time disappears. Words come to a stop, I know you can read my thoughts when you're near. Nothing is the same as it was before you got here. Oh, tell him not to wake me up. It's all in my mind, mind, mind. I told you I'm not waiting on the wall. You look way too good to leave this all to luck. And I don't want your heart, your soul, or your hand. I want your body, want your body instead. Take your clothes off. Take your clothes off.
We're happy to welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show one of the fresh faces and rising stars of the electronic dance music scene, DJ and producer Frank Walker. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Frank, we're so happy to have you here, especially, you know, you got lots of praise from our good friend on the show, Mr. Glenn Morrison. And he's like, you got to talk to Frank. So we're happy to have you on. And I wanted to get people, I guess, understanding a little bit of your background and where you come from and how you got started. So how did you always know that music was going to be your career path? And how did things get rolling for you?
I never really thought I'd be getting into music right away as my full-time career. I've always loved music my whole life, and I guess I went to an art school when I was younger, but I played the trombone, which isn't the most glamorous instrument to play. And I've always messed around with like piano and guitar and a few other things through my whole life. But I started messing around with DJing 5 or 6 years ago, and I probably sounded pretty horrible at first, but I kept practicing that, and I kind of rolled with it. And as of a couple of years ago, I got into kind of playing at house parties in university and getting into a few small bars, and it kind of feels like suddenly overnight it kind of took off, and I was opening for crowds of 1 to 2,000 people and playing some big events, and that's when I kind of realized it could be a bit more than a hobby. Then started messing around with production about a year and a half ago, and that's where I'm at today. So it's really taken off in a big way, and I'm kind of realizing it's more of a career than ever thought it would be. So I'm really excited and happy that it's taken off so well.
Can you actually give us an idea, Frank? Because I think, you know, a lot of people don't really understand what it takes to be a DJ in this day and age. And you said it wasn't even that long ago that you got into it, 5 or 6 years. So can you give us an idea maybe of how many hours you put into sort of getting this good this quickly, and what methods of learning did you actually use?
It's obviously, I'm not exactly sure how many hours I put in, but it's definitely a lot more than people think. It's not just going up there and then hitting play on an iPod. You got to go and obviously, mixing is one huge aspect of it. So when you get up there, you actually got to choose songs that melodically kind of match and they don't sound bad when you're pushing them together. You got to line up the like the kick drums and the beats so stuff doesn't sound like it's all offbeat. And me and Glenn always use the term putting kind of shoes in a drying machine. They're kind of thumping all around. And it sounds pretty bad. So that obviously on its own takes quite a bit of time just to get the technical aspects down. And I think beyond that, the more difficult part is learning the right music selection for the right crowds and knowing how to read crowds. And if you play a song that maybe doesn't go the best of the crowd, kind of how to recover from that faster, and getting back to a place where the crowd has the right energy, and kind of that tension and release of DJing is getting people wanting that big drop to come. So when it drops, they're excited and not just constantly dropping song after song after song that kind of keeps the energy too high. You kind of need a bit of a flow. So that's kind of the more intuitive part that I think is a bit more difficult than people realize.
Yeah, I think it's great that you explain that, because I think a lot of people don't realize just how much it's almost like a science experiment, I think, reading a crowd. And I've DJed some weddings, and it's funny even, and I'm sure you'll agree that, you know, a crowd that you think might go for something might completely surprise you, and then you've got to flip things around and make it work.
100%. I think actually I've DJed a few weddings as well, and I think that is probably one of the harder things to do, because you have such a big, varied demographic. Usually you have a couple of young kids there. You have obviously the wedding and most of their friends. Usually some parents around, so you can't you got to kind of please everyone in a wedding. It's pretty difficult to do and not keep it on the same topic for too long, and obviously have one part of the crowd really like it and kind of alienate the other parts. So yeah, it's a lot more difficult than people give it credit for.
Frank, who has actually influenced you musically, whether it be a DJ, a producer, or, you know, a band or an artist?
Growing up, I was never really knowing I'd be a DJ. I've always listened to a bit of electronic music, but I've always listened to a lot of alternative on top of that. And outside of the dance world, let's say Coldplay is one of my favorite bands. They have awesome, awesome musicians. They have great melodies, great songs. And not that that's reflected in my work, but I think when I'm trying to write stuff, I'm trying to focus on that songwriting process and not just making a big club track that's going to be kind of a flavor of the month and be gone in a year. I want to try to write a dance track that has great vocals that people can sing along to and you can listen to it 5 years from now, and it kind of still has that feel where people want to listen to it and you can still sing along to it.
Does that influence, Frank, your choice of vocalists, you know, who you want to work with, because you're trying to have a song that's actually going to be timeless?
100%. Like obviously, I think having a great hook in a track is very, very important. As good as your instrumental is, it's kind of hard to sing along to an instrumental for people. So if you have that great hook, you can everyone can sing along to it, and that's what really makes a track get huge, I think. But that being said, it definitely helps me, or it definitely has influenced me in trying to find vocalists. There's a, it's hard to find great, great singers out there. And I've been pretty fortunate in the past with I Want Everything, my single that was recently released, and even some stuff I have coming down the pipes, a few singers I'm working with are, I've been wonderful to work with. And I don't know, I think it's really helped me get that kind of, as I mentioned, the songwriting process with great vocalists in it.
Hanging out with us on the show is DJ and producer Frank Walker. Make sure to check out his website, frankwalkermusic.com. Was it important for you, Frank, to add to your repertoire becoming a producer and making your own music?
It definitely was. As I said, like when I started DJing, it's you're just a DJ and you're kind of you're playing other people's tracks, and you kind of you kind of get stuck in a trap of just finding the same music that you'd like and just kind of playing it over and over and not really developing yourself beyond that. So becoming able to produce my own stuff was very important to me. I wanted to be able to kind of, whether it just be editing other songs I kind of like and making them a bit clubbier or taking to the point where I'm writing my own music. It was very important to me to develop my own repertoire and kind of building up my own catalog of music I can play live and that kind of stylistically fits where I am. And it really lets you make a unique DJ set opposed to just being a DJ.
Do you think with the way that the EDM scene is right now, that a DJ can afford not to be making his or her own beats? Like, do you think you really need to be in it to win it kind of thing?
You don't need to. It just obviously, I think it depends on how big you want to go. Some people, I personally really love DJing, and it's fun for me to just DJ without producing. But I think, obviously, it's a bit more fun if you can kind of get some tracks out and start playing some big festivals and playing for bigger crowds. And as much as it is fun just DJing, I think it's a little bit more fun when you're DJing and a song you've written has people singing along to it, and it's a bit more of a great feeling opposed to just having people go crazy when you drop someone else's track. So if someone loves DJing, you can make it relatively big as a DJ, but at some point you're limited to just, like I said, just being a DJ opposed to playing these big festivals and bigger shows.
Frank, when you're working on your music, do you have a structure that you follow when you're writing and producing, or do you take sort of each track separately?
I take each track separately, as in the sense of I don't go into it saying I want it to be this structure exactly, this many bars here, and following a very like kind of structural like path of how the song's going to flow. But I usually, when I'm starting playing, I have a piano in my house, so I'll go sit down, and not really having any ideas in my head, I'll start messing around with different melodies and different chords, and sometimes nothing comes out of it. Sometimes when I'm messing around on a piano, I'll say, oh man, that's really good. I got to go put that in my studio. And then I'll go start actually playing it on virtual instruments and kind of getting some melodies recorded and kind of fleshing it out from there. And then I think the whole structure of the rest of the track kind of falls into place.
Can you talk to us about your new single, I Want Everything? What is there like a message or a theme that you're following and you want your fans to take away from it?
I don't know if there's a theme I want bands to take away from it per se, but it was like I said, it's been released about a month ago. It was my debut single, and it's featuring a singer named Pop Art, and he was actually the one that wrote the lyrics on it, so it's more of his message just getting across. But as far as stylistically where the track is at, it's a pretty good representation of where I want to be in the future. I feel it mixes a good amount of kind of electronic elements with some good melodies that once again relate back to that songwriting process where you get a track that's not too overly club heavy for all intents and purposes. So like I said, it's you could play it in a club if you wanted to, but it has good those good melodies that you can play outside of a club and have on radio or just play while you're driving in your car as well.
Now, do you have any you know, plan of action with regards to up-and-coming artists that you would like to work with, or even someone that is, you know, established in the world like the Rihannas or the Ellie Gouldings of the planet?
I don't have any set plans as of right now, obviously, especially for those big artists. I don't think I'm at a level where I could go to Rihanna and say, I want to produce a track with you. Not yet, at least. Give me a few years. But I'm always open to collaborating with other artists, and I personally feel that the more ears that you get listening to your track and the more opinions you have, to some extent, obviously you don't want hundreds of people listening, but I feel that can kind of, it makes the track a bit better because everyone has their own ways of producing and has small little suggestions, and it kind of like helps you out a little bit there. As for specific artists, right now I'm not really working with anyone in specific other than Glenn Morrison, who you mentioned earlier. He's mentoring me, so it's a great mentor to have, and he's kind of influencing me positively as I'm producing.
What's up next for you, Frank, career-wise, in the next, like, 6 to 12 months?
I've been producing tons, and I Want Everything is a very the very beginning of hopefully many tracks to come. I've been kind of building up a big backlog and trying to get some good management on my side and get my stuff in the right hands, as well as I continue to DJ quite a bit on top of it. I think it's important to maintain those skills. I'm playing a monthly residency at Maison Mercer in Toronto, which is going really well. Coming up, my friends back from in university are throwing a bunch of big kind of tours where they're getting a bunch of other artists that are coming and touring through, such as Adventure Club, Mac J, a bunch of other really big DJs. So they're kind of putting me on tours with them, so I get to play alongside some other big artists. And ultimately, is keep producing better and better music. I'm still relatively new to the scene, and I've got a ton to learn still. And I don't think you should ever stop practicing and just keep on writing music, and only better content can come out of that.
I wanted to ask you, Frank, before I let you go, you know, with the scene itself, like you mentioned Adventure Club, and recently I was actually able to chat with Zed's Dead and the Chainsmokers and all that sort of stuff. Are you guys, as a whole, sort of supportive of each other when you see you guys at these club dates and like you said, going on these tours? Like, do you sort of cheer each other on? Because I know, for example, you know, I've been fortunate to interview bands like Headley and Neverist, and they sort of are very supportive of one another. I'm just wondering if it's the same in your scene.
Obviously can't speak for everyone personally, but I know there's a lot of great people out there. It's, for me and Glenn personally, I think it's great seeing what's going on with the scene and kind of how it's grown so much recently. And just, I think it seeing other DJs do really well kind of inspires me, and it's like showing where I could kind of be in a few years, because I don't know, the scene's growing so fast. That being said, whenever you see another DJ doing something awesome or playing a huge show, it's kind of, obviously I'm going to cheer them on, and it kind of, it definitely helps having these big DJs kind of push the scene forward. So I'm very supportive of it.
Frank, well, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you for having me.
That's DJ and producer Frank Walker. Again, you can grab all of his social media and check out his music on his website, frankwalkermusic.com.
I want everything. It doesn't matter if you don't have time. I want everything in a cheap car, moving to the state of mind. Just try to imagine us both in a world with two faces, dancing home.
Dancing.
know here on the Kelly Alexander Show, we love to present to you new music, and we have an exclusive right now premiering the brand new song from producer and DJ Stonebridge called You Can Have It All. The song features Love Guns and Coco LaRue, and it's his latest offering after his hit song Be Kind with Crystal Waters. Stonebridge is an amazing producer. He's worked with the likes of Jason Derulo, New Kids on the Block, not to mention garnering a Grammy Award nomination for his work with Ne-Yo on his hit song, Closer. So get ready. We are so excited. The exclusive premiere of Stonebridge's new song, You Can Have It All, on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, this is Stonebridge, and you're listening to new music on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Last time.